JJ, he fucking leaves and goes to sleep in the van. So now it's just me and my other friend just hanging out in this room with this dude, pretending like we're asleep. Then all of a sudden, he gets a gun.
Gentlemen, back today, we've got somebody who is hip-hop creative artist, rapper, cinematographer, cool guy, hell of a human being. We got Mopes in the house. What's going on, man?
Yeah, doing well, man. How are you?
Doing all right. We're trudging along in life.
Yeah.
Yeah. So you are signed as Strange Famous Records.
Yeah.
Buddied up with Sage Francis. Toured with him a bit. Is that right?
So yeah, our relationship started way back in the day, like 1999, 2000. We were both kind of coming up on the RI scene, where Sage just was you know, more advanced in his career than I was, and he had a radio show on 90.3, which was a big indie hip hop station back in the day in Rhode Island. And I had passed him a demo, and that's kind of how our relationship started. So
wow. Yeah. Were you pretty advantageous in your younger days? Were you really trying to go out there and be hip hop guy?
No, I wasn't, man. Yeah, shit. Like, how did it started? I was like, I was just writing like goofy raps when I was younger. Like, I would do like Weird Al Yankovic kind of shit, where I would like take a song and I would just like rewrite the lyrics and make it funny. And then I started to write more emotional stuff. And kind of use it as like a vent of like, all right, just shit that I was going through. And but I never like released it, you know. And it wasn't like a whole song of like me being sad, but it was like just the you know, me talking about, yo, I'm dope, and yeah, I'm really sad a little bit. I'm dope. You know what I mean? So, once I saw that there was an indie scene. I was like, oh shit. And there was an open mic that was happening in Providence at the Black Repertory Theater that was popping off. And I was like 17 at the time. And I had never really been on stage before. So I went, you know, fucking got a verse memorized, went there. I was like panic attack mode, cotton mouth. But I kind of didn't. Yeah, dude, it was funny because there was three of us on stage. And after the two people went in front of me, the beat stopped. So they had to like switch the beat up. So I was like ready to go. It was like, nope, beat switch. I was like, okay, all right. And but I basically blacked out. I blacked out. But I did well because people were receptive to it and kind of came up to me. And then I think what happened is once that happened, I was like, oh shit, I'm getting approval from the scene. Like, I have a little bit of talent. I'll write another verse and come back, you know? And that's kind of how it started. And then when I would get positive and negative feedback, that kind of fueled me to like prove that I could actually rap. So it was just like, I never was like, oh, I'm going to make an album and be a rapper. It was more of like, oh no, I'm going to prove people wrong that I can actually do this. And all of a sudden I started putting albums out and I started doing shows, and it was like, what the fuck? Where am I going? Where is this headed? You know?
So early, but it goes back to Weird Al Yankovic and stuff. So, but you had a knack for like music or rhyming songwriting. Where did that come from?
So I just I grew up loving music. Like, my parents played James Brown, Curtis Mayfield, the Beatles, Led Zeppelin, just like the whole. Yeah, it was like that, and when I heard that growing up, and then I first heard hip hop, I was like, this is like, this language is speaking to me. Even though I'm like a white kid from Rhode Island, I'm like Public Enemy is like the energy that they have. I could feel all this shit, and like, yep. You know, the even the sounds that they were sampling made sense to me. So, and I always like to draw, so I was I was always kind of creative. And then at some point I just got into writing. I don't know why. I have no idea why. I think I was just like, I'm fucking bored in my room and I'm just going to start fucking around, right? And at that time there weren't that many like white folks rapping, so I was like, I'm never going to see the light of day. This is me just fucking around. And then I just started honing the craft, and I think I got really into the like writing, recording, like, you know, going into a studio, recording, like that whole process, that whole creative process, I kind of fell in love with. So that's what got me hooked for sure. And then I had to figure out how to perform on stage. That's kind of how it, that's kind of how it all panned out.
So how did that go? How did that go initially when you,
I just, I literally jumped into the water and drowned for a little bit. And then it just, cause I had never done it before. Like I didn't grow up performing in front of people. So I had to get used to it. And it was just a slow grind and of trial and error of me just finally getting more comfortable on stage. You know,
would you freeze up at first or would you like black out and just perform as good as you could?
No, I was just, a lot of times I would get just real fucking nervous and, you know, I was just like sweating and I'd have to like use the bathroom before I go on stage. And it was just like all like my body would just go into anxiety mode, but I'd somehow remember my lyrics. But when I was up there, it, I feel like it was, I was being forced at gunpoint. You know what I mean? Like that's the, I wasn't up there like real comfortable and being smooth about it. I was just like, you know, like I was on a mission kind of thing. So I'm pretty sure Sage probably saw me and was like, what the fuck's up with this dude? He's interesting, but what the hell's going on here? And like my in-between banter was so fucking random. Oh my God. Yeah. Cause I would just like, oh, there's like dead air right now. I'm drinking water, and I would just say some random shit, and then put the music back on.
Yeah. You're an artist. You're supposed to make up.
Yeah,
shit.
Exactly. Yeah, exactly. So yeah, I just it was just me winging it.
Yeah.
And then I finally, started doing more shows, I started to watch people. Like I think seeing Sage, who I think is top five, one of the best hip hop performers. Like that includes Rakim, that includes KRS.
Sure.
He's up there and just seeing him from the position I was in Rhode Island and just like aspiring and seeing him, I'm like, man, this guy is fucking incredible. So learning from him, getting notes from him and then just kind of taking tidbits from other people and how they were doing stuff and then make it my, you know, try to find my own style on stage. And it was always just me on stage for the most part.
What have you learned about audiences since like when you started to now? Would you feel like are they not as scary, or you're comfortable with rocking a crowd at this point?
Oh yeah. At this point I don't like my nerves now are just like anxiousness to get on stage. It's not it's just like I feel like that extra bit of energy kind of happening. And I think what I've learned is the audience isn't aware when you fuck up. There might be like a couple lyric nerds out there who are just like, oh, yeah, you know what I mean? But
taking notes.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, like, yeah, you fucked up. Or some rapper out there is like, yeah, you fucking flubbed it. But for the most part, it's like now it's like if I miss a word or for anything, I just kind of play. I don't get nervous about it. I just play it off and keep it moving. And I think just having fun now. Where before, when I was younger, it was like, this is a fucking, like this is something that I have to do and it's a nightmare.
Yeah, right.
you know? Yeah. And then finally, when I was like, all right. And usually what would happen is like as I got better, my first couple of songs, I would feel that jitteriness, but then I would chill out and it would be all good. Where now it's like, I go on stage, I feel real comfortable. I want to interact with people. I want to talk with people before and after I go on set. So I've learned to love it basically. So,
yeah. And you become more grateful over time because you realize that everybody's just there for a good time and that they,
mostly, yeah, exactly.
They, if they're there, they're already probably going to like you. Like they're not going to be like, well, that guy's is really rare.
But, yeah. But, and you know how hip hop is like, I'm not going to go and like wave your fucking hands and you say that. Yeah. Like I want crowd participation, but if people want to chill out in the back, it's like that's all good. You know what I mean? I want you to be comfortable and where you're at and I might come up to you. Like I might physically come closer to you, but I'm not gonna tell you what to do and all this shit anymore. Like I want you to be
so. Like a comedian, just come up there and start insulting people individually.
Yeah,
like,
exactly.
Nice hat.
Yeah, exactly. Or just like it's like, yeah, I'm putting the energy in, but I'm not going to insult the audience. Like, Like, I'm going to give you everything I have, and hopefully it makes you want to come up and join and participate. So
you've traveled a lot with your music too. And so what's that been like? Where have you been that you really liked?
So, I mean, it was life-changing because, you know, I grew up in Rhode Island, but I think the furthest I went to Disney World once, or Disneyland, whatever's in Florida. But for the most part, like, I would go to New York City, I go to Boston, we'd go like camping in New Hampshire, but I didn't really leave that like 2 or 3 hour radius from Rhode Island. So I didn't, all I knew was the Northeast corner for the most part, you know? So when I first like did a show in Iowa, I'm just like, yo, what the fuck is going on here? Oh, and, you know, and being on the road, and like, I remember being driving through Tennessee in the Smoky Mountains, and then just realizing how beautiful the landscape is in the United States, but also how there's just different cultures in different pockets of the United States. So it was the best education I could have ever gotten, just about people, about myself. Yeah, it was incredible.
Any surly people, drunks or crazy people? Like, cause on my,
oh my God,
my time on the road, let me tell you, the road is not without its nuts. I mean,
yeah.
Some people are just crazier than a bag of fucking snakes, man. So
yeah, yeah, I mean,
tell me a story.
So I can tell you, I got a couple. So like the first tour I did was with another label called Galapagos 4. And I don't think I've ever shared this story outside of like my friends. But
here we go.
The first night of the first show, we were in Madison, Wisconsin. And we were going to stay at the promoter's house after the show. So, oh my God. So after the show, we go to his house. He's like clearly trashed, drunk. And we're just playing video games. We're playing like PS2 or whatever, PS1, whatever the game was. We're playing Fight Night, I think it was. And he's just saying the most irrational shit. And he wants to come play video games now, the promoter. So he's playing video games with us, talking like real derogatory shit to us, like it's getting personal. We're like, what the fuck? So like, you know what, we're all going to bed. So like, we all like kind of found a couch to sleep on, and me and another friend of mine, we're sleeping on couches like in the living room, and this dude decides to stay there drunk, like in the sofa seat next to us. And he starts fucking mumbling. He starts talking about like his marriage. He like, all of a sudden he goes away. He comes back with like his wedding album. He's just like talking shit to everybody, all the photos. And me and my boy are looking at each other like, this dude's going to snap. Like, what are we going to do? Like, are we going to stay here? So my boy JJ, he fucking leaves and goes to sleep in the van. So now it's just me and my other friend just hanging out in this room with this dude, pretending like we're asleep. Then all of a sudden, he gets a gun. He has a gun with him. Yeah. And he's like sitting there with like a bottle of whiskey, playing Tupac Machiavelli with a gun. And he's pointing the gun at the ceiling, being like, fuck you, mom.
Oh my God, dude.
dude, it was fucking bananas. This is the first day of the tour, and I'm just like, I'm gonna die. Like, I put my trust staying at this promoter's house, yo. And he ended up passing out on the couch at some point, falling asleep. And I remember like he was playing the Machiavelli record, and it just was hitting that like, but you know, like when a record ends and it's just playing, and like, yo, that whole, I let that shit go the whole night because I was like, I don't want this dude to know that I'm up, because
chances are you would just be some kind of like makeshift psychiatrist for the night, where you just sit there and fucking listen to this guy's shit.
Yeah, oh my God, dude, I was like, what the fuck is going on with my life? Like, why am I here? Like, yeah, that was bananas. And that same tour, we did a show in Chattanooga, Tennessee, And it was like this bar that no one wanted to hear rap music in Chattanooga. So we're there rapping, and basically we'd all were hanging outside except for the person performing on stage, because that's kind of the venue it was. So I remember I was talking with this older white guy who had a fake leg, and his name was Nettie Murphy, and he's just like this local Tennessee dude talking all kinds of shit. I remember I went on stage, performed, and when I came back out, Nettie had taken his leg off, was like waving it in the air, just like just spitting like racist raps. I just remember like what happened between like the 20 minutes we went on stage.
Yeah.
It's like, yo, you can't make this shit up.
To be fair, if I had a missing leg, I would take that motherfucker off and constantly like wave it at people. Yeah. Like, whoa.
Yeah. Nettie Murphy, man. Yeah.
Nettie Murphy.
There's a lot of those kinds of like, what is going on? Yeah, kind of shit. But
well, we're talking about like clubs and like late night, you know.
Yeah.
You're always there. Bars serve alcohol, and I've had just the most surly people. Cross my path. It never gets old. But I mean, do you get any sleep on tour? What's the accommodations like? Has it been cozy, or has it?
No.
Obviously,
it's been rough.
Sleeping on the sofa of some psycho guy's house is one thing. But
yeah. I mean, I think in the early days, it was whatever we could put together. So usually it was like 4, 5, 6 nights in a row on somebody's couch, and then we'd have enough to stay in a hotel room. So it'd be like 7 dudes in a hotel room.
Like, scoot over, dude.
Oh man, dude, we were like sardines on a bed one time. It was like 4 of us on a bed. Oh god. So, but that like when I was like 22, 23.
Yeah.
So during those years, it was like I could fuck with that.
Yeah.
But then, you know, fast forward to now, it's like, I'm staying in a hotel. Straight you know up. What I mean? That's it. Yeah. Like I can't, I'm like 42. I got, you know, my back. Yeah, I can't, I'm not, I also like don't want to be in somebody's place. That's unless I know them, you know what I mean? Like, cause like, I remember the last couch I slept on, it was like at this, and no disrespect to this person, but it was just grimy.
Right.
It was like a dude bachelor apartment, and it was just so messy, and it had that like cigarette alcohol dust smell to it, and I'm like, I need to get out of here. This is not what I want to be doing right now.
My first apartment kind of starter kit.
Yeah, exactly. I mean, just like no one's doing the dishes.
Yeah.
It's just, they're just piling up. So
I remember that. Did you have a first apartment like that? It was just like a bong and was like the centerpiece of the,
Yeah. It's funny because the first apartment I really stayed in was with, a bunch of music dudes in Rhode Island. I think it was like 5 or 6 of us, but a lot of them were OCD. So the kitchen was all, the kitchen was super clean and shit. And, So
do the dishes, dog. It's dirty, yo.
I feel like most of the folks that I like, the dudes that I had shared apartments with, were pretty clean. And then at some point when I met my ex, I was 25, and I lived with like a woman steadily for a first time. Like, oh, this is actually how you live,
right?
And like take care of shit.
Dude,
so,
if it wasn't for a woman, I'd still be like wearing the same clothes every day.
Yeah. Like I have like a table runner, you know what I mean? Like I would never have a table runner if I, you know what I mean? Like shit like that. Just like make the house look nice and stuff. So,
coasters.
Yeah, exactly. Like all those little accents and cleaning, like, you know, so
Yeah. Well, if it wasn't for them, we would be cavemen living in the back of the Walmart, you know?
Yeah, pretty much.
I would be for sure.
Yeah. I mean, I don't think, it's like, I've always liked being clean, but as far as like worrying about aesthetics,
right?
Like, I don't give a shit. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I'm not like plants. Like, I got plants because I think ladies like that. Or it makes it, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So
I just see that in like advertisements in houses. I'm like, okay.
Yeah, exactly. Like When I go on Pinterest, they look at like nice apart, like, you know, nice living rooms. I'm like, okay, they got like the greenery and shit.
Feng shui. So,
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Give me some of that feng shui, please. Yeah. So what's going on now? I mean, look, you just made this record. Is it out yet or is it not? Can you tell me something about the record?
Yeah. So the new record I have that's out is called Hammond Eggers. It's with Trademark. I produced the entire album, and me and Mark share the raps on it. It's coming out on vinyl, CD, tape, so whatever, you know, whatever you want to listen to, you can get it. Me and Mark, I mean, how did that start?
That's an interesting duo, yeah.
Yeah, so I knew of Mark and Mark knew of me, and during the pandemic, we had both simultaneously hit up Sage and were like, hey, I want to work with this guy. I hit Sage about, I wanted to work with Mark and Mark wanted to work with me. And Sage was like, okay, great. So we were working, originally it was going to be, Mark was going to do the entire album of his own writing and his own raps. And I was just going to produce it. And then like halfway, or like maybe three or four songs in, he's like, why don't you get on a couple of songs? Why don't you get on? So we started doing that. And then I was like, you know, I'm making the beat. So I was like, I kind of want to rap on this beat. And then all of a sudden it just became like this group thing that happened. And he's an incredible writer. He, you know, his cousin is John Cena, which is bananas. So he worked with John Cena, like on his, you know, he was on the like early John Cena rap records.
So yeah. And John Cena is, well, for people that don't know, pro wrestler, actor, and also what, MC?
Yeah, I don't know if like he rapped when he was younger and that's the persona he took, you know, with WWE, WWF. And then he, you know, decided to like put out albums because it was like, I don't know. I'm not really sure how that worked out, but yeah, he was putting music out as an MC. And he got his main theme song was a beat by Jake One. And it's fucking banging. The beat is.
I actually heard some of John Cena rapping on Spotify recently. I was like, damn.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, he can rap. He's like Northeast rap, you know?
Yeah. So. Yeah. It's good. It's good. I'm always impressed at the pipeline between pro wrestling and rapping, right? There's like this pipeline.
Yeah.
You know, you get all.
Yeah. Because rap, I mean, hip hop is, as much as it's cool, it's some nerdy shit. Like collecting records, this is nerdy shit. It's nostalgia. It's, it's like, you know, hip hop was like this little thing that, you know, only a few people knew about back in the day. And now, you know, so I think it had that like collector's kind of vibe to it where it was like, a secret club kind of thing.
Yeah,
and I feel like wrestling as I got older, like especially old wrestling, it's real nostalgic. So, you know, not too many folks are hip to like 80s and 90s wrestling and all that shit. So,
yeah. I know a lot of, I'm not like a big wrestling fan, but I know all the wrestling history because I have, it's in my family and like friends of mine are big into it. And I always, you know, when I grew up, and this is horrible, I'm going to say this on the air, I was a fan of the Insane Clown Posse as a young, trashy white kid from Denver.
Yeah.
And it changed my life. It showed me that, you know, weird people could make rap and stuff. So I did hip hop and then I kind of went into, you know, it was always interesting though that the wrestling and the thing went together. And it's just like, I think you're right. Yeah. It's like nostalgia and community and maybe a little braggadocio. Like it's, we're tough. We're cool. We'll kick your ass.
I could see that. Yeah. Cause rap, everybody's pretending to be tough.
Right.
You know what I mean? Everybody should, and same thing with wrestling, right? Yeah, you have this persona and you're trying to, and it, you know, it has like the good guys, bad guys, you know, kind of thing. It's very, Like, did you know Griselda?
Yeah,
Griselda has a lot of the wrestling references and all that stuff too, so.
Yeah, that's a trip. Yeah. That's a trip.
Yeah.
Yeah, talk about suplexing people and, I'm always like, well, all right.
Yeah, like a Junkyard Dog reference or just like these random 80s wrestlers and shit. Yeah.
So I also wanted to ask you before we cut out. So you producing music too, right?
Yeah. So, I started producing. Actually, I started producing because I didn't want to pay for beats when I was younger. And I was like, I figured the whole shit out pretty much by myself. I would come through with other producers and they would kind of show me some things, but I I really started to hone in as being like a producer within the past, say, 3 or 4 years. I feel like I really know what I'm doing. Like, in like when I'm working with an artist or putting an album together, like I feel like I have the skill set now to actually make a quality album.
So what's your preferred tool set? What are you using to make these wonderful beats?
So 95% of what I use is sampled from vinyl. So I'm a huge nerd about records. I love going record digging. Like, yeah, I got hooked as soon as I started doing that. So I'll get a bunch of records. I'll sample a bunch of, you know, sounds and drums, and then I'm kind of putting it together in software I use is Logic, and the interface I use is the Akai Mini MPK 2. It's like the it's got buttons and it's got keys on it. It's like a MIDI controller. So I'm using I've always liked triggering the sounds. You know what I mean? Like, yeah, it's just something about like hearing it. It's like, I don't want to like drag it there. I want to like put it there. Mm-hmm. So I'll play everything out on the controller, and I'll do all my sequencing and effects on Logic.
Okay. Okay. So, yeah. I always loved the pads of the old MPC was a like.
Oh, big, yeah. That's how I started.
Unit. Yeah. Me too.
Yeah. I started on the 2000 XL.
It was a very confusing thing at first, but then I was plugging all kinds of instruments into it and trying to like cut samples to it. So, but that means that you have an encyclopedic knowledge of music then, right? From being a sampling kind of old school hip hop guy.
I mean, yeah. I mean, there are people who are way more advanced than I am. So I would say, yeah, I'm like a novice as far as just knowing, when I go look for records now, I'm looking at certain labels, who produced the label, who's playing instruments on the record, like, who produced the record?
Well, what's your shit? What's your flavor?
I can't, I'm not going to go into detail because that's the code, but
that's his code. Yeah.
The code, but like, 60, 70 soul music, sure. Psychedelic records, sure. Prog rock, jazz. I like to mess with soundtracks. So, but I mean, I have country records as well. I got folk records. I got pop vocal records. So, like, it's kind of.
Do you look for bare instrumentation, like a slide guitar that's like on its own or something? Some kind of like.
It's funny. So if like a record store lets you listen to records there, mm-hmm. I'm pulling. Certain labels that I know, they usually have dope music. Certain people I know like are playing on the record, or I'm just looking at the cover. Like anytime I see like a bunch of black dudes and with one white dude, and that white dude's like the drummer, I'm like, fuck yeah, I know that dude's funky. You know, you can't be a white dude in all black band and you're the drummer and not have funky shit on it. So it's like visually, what does the art look like? I'll look at the song titles, and like. If something has like a mandolin on it, I'm probably not gonna fuck with it.
Really? You know what I mean? Why?
Well, because a lot of times it becomes like it's like it's too folksy.
How
and like,
dare you?
I know, How but like you? I know, but I've gotten lucky sometimes. I'm like, oh shit, this is like prog rocky in it.
DJ Shadow sampled El Condor Pasa by Simon and Garfunkel and made it work, and that was a mandolin.
That's correct. That's what I mean. So like, you know. Again, if I have limited time and I'm like I can't listen to the record, I'm not gonna chance it with the man. Right. with the man. Okay. But yeah, if I can listen to it, I'll definitely check anything. You know.
Well, it's so funny. Like some BPMs aren't gonna work for you. They're just not gonna work. And so there's bluegrass and stuff. Never like I would put as a hip hopper, I'd put on bluegrass and say I can't use this shit. But then later in life, I'm like, I actually like bluegrass music.
Well, yeah, I mean, you can fuck with the time speed and all that stuff, you know. And I think
right, the kids are
like
doing
slowing
that now.
Things down. Yeah, and like you know, yeah, you could slow something that was really fat, like some like disco. Slow some disco down, and you're just like, whoa, what? Like, it becomes this whole other song going on and stuff. So. Yeah.
So would you say that there's a sweet spot for like especially funk and soul like 68 to 75 or what's your sweet spot for?
Yeah, otherwise? So usually it's so when you do like late 60s a lot of times the mix isn't that good. Mm-hmm. Like the mix is going to like it's just going to be all over the place. It's going to sound raw, but it might, you know, the piano might be just buried under the drums.
Man, you hear Sly and the Family Stones mix. Whoa.
Yeah. Yeah. So, but once you hit like the 70s, like, so I think between maybe 69, but I would say between 70 and 76 is what I'm looking for as far as soul goes. But because like once you, after 76, it gets very disco-y.
Yep.
So I'll still check it, but you'll get a lot more of that, like, doom, 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 ding, 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 and it becomes, like, this big, you know, epic kind of thing. So,
yeah, you want the backbeat, yeah. right? You want the back, in a slower backbeat. But, yeah, I totally agree. I would say 68 to 76, but, yeah, it's like, when it comes to sampling music, the quality has changed almost every year since 1920 on all these recordings to where the sweet spot really was that. And, like, 80s. All the synthesizers and wacky noises came in. Like, I love 80s music, don't get me wrong.
Yeah.
But when we're talking hip hop, like the original cool kind of sample shit, I think you're right. I think you're right. 70 to 76.
Yeah. And then I'll say this though, I have early 80s records that are bananas. And a lot of times with like the foreign records, like you'll get something like some kind of jazz or soul thing from the 80s. It's like Japanese or whatever, and it's fire. It's all fire.
Don't tell me you're talking about city pop.
I don't know what's what. I don't know the name of that.
Okay, so I'll give you a name. Masayoshi Takanaka. Do you know this?
I mean, it's got to be where it's like animation kind of stuff, like the anime kind of, soundtrack.
It's
stuff.
Like, well, it's like 1980s ripoff of like funky smooth jazz. But it's done in the Japanese style.
I'll
send you a link after this. You'll fucking love this shit, I think.
Yeah, that's definitely the stuff that I've checked because it sounds like it's a movie. It sounds like it's an anime movie soundtrack.
Totally, yeah.
And you're just like, but those, man, like everybody's hip to that stuff now. So those records are expensive. So, I try to,
You know. If you want the record, but, you know, you can work your magic with an MP3, maybe.
That's true.
But I recommend that. I think some hip hop guy released a record that was a city pop. Oh no, it was a Doom, MF Doom mashup with Masayoshi Takanaka and MF Doom.
And it was
good. And people seemed to like it. No, I'll send you some links and see if anything tickles you. But
okay.
So what's next for you? And then we'll cut out. Tell us what's the news?
So right now, like obviously Ham and Eggers is out. That's what we're pushing. We're pushing like currently. We have a special project coming out on Halloween, which is featuring a bunch of SFR artists. It's going to be dope. I have a new record I'm working on with Jesse the Tree, which is his next solo record. I'm sending beats to Sage, so hopefully me and Sage put something together. I'm working on another album with this dude Old Boy, who's newly signed to SFR. Is like a bunch of features on it. We got like Brother Ali's on it, Mr. Liff's on it, and then we got another record I'm working on. It's going to be Meter Maids, myself, and Jesse the Tree. It's going to be kind of be like mixtape Wu-Tang style, how we put that together. But yeah, a bunch of stuff in the works. So,
we're looking forward to it, everybody.
There'll
be links in the description to all the music. Ham and Eggers going to be out soon.
It's already out.
It's already out. Thank God.
It's already out. Yeah, yeah.
The beats are amazing. The rhymes are amazing. The two of you are amazing. You know, the record label's amazing. There's an incredible amount of talent going on down there, Strange Famous. You're a wonderful human being to talk to as well.
Thanks, man.
Yeah, man.
So appreciate it.
We'll sign off to everybody in TV land, and then we'll chat a little bit afterwards. What do you say?
Okay. Sounds good.
All right. Thanks, everybody. We'll see you soon.
Bye. Peace.